all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Darren and Sterling both live in studio. A lot of fun stuff to get into today. Chiefs talk in the first segment. We'll get to some NBA, some Olympics. We'll be joined by Sam Hayes in the second segment. We're going to talk some baseball. I'm very excited for that. He's a very analytically driven mind, so I'm very excited to get a
lot of nerd talk.
Exactly. We're going to get some nerd talking. It'll be nice to get some in-depth analysis. But first, Darren, how you doing?
I'm tired, man. This heat is kicking my ass, man. Steve and I drove up to training camp today, and he's like, man, I can't believe you got on, you know, sweatpants or whatever, long pants. I'm like, dude, I'm trying to lose weight. So however I get my sweat at, you know, again, I wear, you know, waist trainer, waistband, whatever you want to call it. And then, of course, I shoot footage of Patrick, you know, while he's out on, you know, warming up. And I'm like, this dude got, you know, his dry fit stuff, his legs, his arms. And I'm like, dude is out here 100 degree weather. Like, come get it. And it's funny. I don't feel the effects of it until literally I'm pulling up to the station, because it's like, I get here and then it's like I feel kind of sluggish, because it's like, okay, it's finally, my body's finally kind of cooled down a little bit from the sweat and the heat and stuff. But now I'm on the other end of the heat exhaustion right now, to where it's like last night, dude, when I tell you, after I left here, I had to make a couple of runs, and by the time I got home, I didn't want to go work out. But I ended up, you know, I pushed myself and I literally dragged myself out the house to go to my mom's house to help her with her software stuff on her computer. And from there, I was like, man, I could just go home and nobody would even know I didn't go to the gym. But I drove past Planet Fitness, pulled over, went to the gym, did a workout, and went back home. But, man, it's wearing me out. I'm not going to lie. People are like, you shouldn't work out every day. They probably got a point, because I'm kind of feeling the effects of it right now, because I'm kind of burnt out. But I do feel good.
I got 4 games of softball tonight. I am going to be dying. 4 games in this weather, I will be struggling. For basketball, I said we had 6 guys. I was dying. I am not in shape, Darren. This is terrible for me.
Well, I kind of knew that to begin with.
Ouch, that hurts.
I mean, for someone who claims to be drilling buckets and doing this and doing that, I guess it's a difference for you.
Yeah, I'm like J.J. Redick. I go three-point line to three-point line. That's all I do.
Oh, man, that's what's up, though. I mean, but you're staying active, you're staying fit. Oh, and the one good thing is, as usual, I can't depend on the Royals when I need them to do what I need them to do for me, but they're winning 5-0 right now. Closing out, they would have won the series against the White Sox if they can hold on 3-1.
One thing, I just looked this up, and this is very funny.
Yeah.
Very off topic. Kelvin Benjamin, you know how he got cut yesterday without even taking a snap at training camp.
Well, initially, when we talked, I think we talked about it briefly yesterday. I think it was more so there were rumors that he had stolen some food or something out of cafeteria or something to that effect. But
what it is he was supposed to come into training camp wearing 251, right? Because he was 265 in the spring.
Yeah,
he came in at 268. So he gained weight from when Joe Judge says, hey, we need you to lose some weight.
Well, what he said, the weight that he gained was muscle. That's what he said. I'm quoting the man from what he said in the article.
I'm just saying, that's fine. But when you've been known to be overweight.
He was a 300-pound wide receiver, yeah, wasn't he?
When you've known to be overweight and you come in, when the coach asks you to cut a little bit and you come in gaining weight.
But they were going to play him at tight end as well, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. He's supposed to be 250 at tight end.
Well, that's what they would have hoped. I mean, how much does Travis weigh? Because Travis is a big boy.
Travis is also 6'6", 6'5".
Ain't Kelvin Benjamin that big?
I don't know if he's that big.
Oh. No, look, man, one thing, and let's get it over to Chiefs training camp today. One thing that we noticed that even from a distance and when they walk up, these are some large men. You know, they are some large big boys out there. And as I told Steve, I said, if they look big now, because even McCole looks kind of thick, you know, even the fast stuff. Even though they're like that, I said, wait till they get on pads. And so, you know, because we keep marveling at the size of Orlando Brown and Lucas Niang and some of these other, and Trey Smith. And it's like, just imagine when they really put their pads and stuff on, how big these guys are going to be. I got to say, Creed Humphreys today looked like he was about to get cut. You know, saying he had a...
Did he struggle?
He had a couple of missed handoffs to Patrick. You know, a couple of, what would you call, fumbles, you know, so to speak. But, yeah, you know, all that being equal, it was, you know, just a rough day. But he looked good. I mean, he did look good. Like, there was one particular play when they were doing their 11-on-11 where he quick snapped the ball to Patrick. And next thing you know, I think it was a draw play, but he just moved over into his hole so quickly, you know, from after the snap. And he and Trey Smith, man, they look good. And what I, you know, talked about it yesterday, the fact that they put you out there on the first team opening day of training camp, to me, only way you lose that is by injury or you just don't practice well. And Trey Smith has been awesome. Creed Humphreys has been awesome. Even that second unit, man, they look good. But
the second unit looks better than whatever was starting in the Super Bowl last year for Kansas City. I mean, that's how bad and banged up the Chiefs were, that the second unit right now looks better than the starting unit did in the Super Bowl.
I love the idea of, you know, Niang being a swing tackle, because he can, one, he'll be able to get in, you know, either side anytime. If Orlando, for whatever reason, needs to be spelled, he can come in there. Of course, if Rimmer go down or something, he can plug in right there. I can't remember what his natural position is. I don't know if it's right tackle.
Right tackle. Well, they drafted him to be a tackle. They didn't really tab him as a left or right. They just were hoping they could get a tackle. I think the best case scenario is him doing this left tackle on the second string, at least starting off, just in case anything happens to Orlando Brown, because you don't have another left tackle on this roster. You saw what Mike Rimmers did. He fine at right tackle. You don't want him at left. If Lucas Niang can be a fine left tackle, that saves you a lot of heartache. Just in case Rimmers goes down, then you can throw Niang in there. But you want someone who at least has the ability to play left tackle. So getting left tackle's reps, snaps now, to me, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Andrew Heck knows what he's doing. Andrew Reid knows what they're doing. I you know, not going to be no chiller because, you know, I don't do that. But I do like how this team is – you know, kind of positioning itself. It's going to be a good year. It's funny. I don't know if I'm more excited 2019 covering the Chiefs or 2021 covering the Chiefs. I mean, I think I have some excitement of covering them this year because of the unknown, the expected, you know, we kind of knew in 2019, because they were Super Bowl driven, you know, after what took place in the championship game. But with all the moving parts, especially on the offensive line that they got outside of Rimmers, who was returning on that offensive line, you don't know how things are going to look. And Steve and I, we were talking on the way up there that, you know, we think that it's going to be viable and it's going to be very important, obviously, for the Chiefs to establish that particular running game. Because he was like, "Dan, can you imagine if we see a Kareem Hunt?" I'm like, "Duh, of course I can. I keep talking about it. I mean, Kareem Hunt is here. I think we 3-time Super Bowl champions. I just think that they're that good with Kareem Hunt." I said, "Kareem Hunt was a special running back." I'm like, literally, Mahomes.
He's not the offensive line.
Though. No. I get that.
He wouldn't have done anything in the Super Bowl last year.
Well, but again, all I'm saying is if Kareem Hunt is here, a lot of things would be different. Players, you know, certain players may not have just gotten in just because of we got Kareem Hunt in the backfield versus the Clyde. Because when we're not drafting Clyde, so that we might have been looking at maybe another wide receiver, maybe a lineman. So I'm just saying there were obviously domino effects that would have taken place or would have taken place if we still had a Kareem Hunt. If obviously film didn't get and we, you know, we didn't have to release him. We're just saying that had he been here or had he, you know, if he was still around, just because you got to remember, and people keep forgetting, that this offense that Patrick Mahomes has led, you know, during the Super Bowl year and last year, it's not the same offense when we had Kareem Hunt. It was more of a balanced attack because Kareem could do what he was able to do. Because he was,
and the O-line was better.
Yeah.
Well, that's the biggest issue. That's my main point is we can talk about Kareem Hunt all we want. I think it comes down to the offensive line.
I miss Kareem.
I think the offensive line is going to be a bigger factor over how the run game is set up and done than the running back itself. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a very talented running back. He couldn't do anything last year because the offensive line was so poor getting pushes up front. That's as big a reason as almost any why they retooled it. You know how much of a struggle it was getting one-yard situations? You know how many times we yelled, well, why aren't they picking up a one-yard? Why are they running a screenplay to Blake Bell on third and fourth down?
Sterling,
you know,
you heard me yelling at you from the game because it costed me money.
Well, my point was is because they physically couldn't. They couldn't move anyone up front, so Clyde had nowhere to go. That was the main issue, was the offensive line didn't bring up any holes. That was why Le'Veon Bell struggled so mightily because, you know, we don't even know if Le'Veon has anything left in the tank, first of all. But when you can't get any holes and he's a dancer, that's even worse. So the offensive line getting revamped, retooled, to me, this is bigger for Clyde than almost anyone else.
I agree. The only question I would have for you to follow up on that is, do you see a scenario because – and I'm just thinking this because of size. I know he'll get more opportunities because he's starting as Clyde Edwards-Helaire would be. But I still think with this offensive line, it might be better for Darrell Williams. Just because he's a bigger back when he gets a chance to get in, I think he'll be able to kind of utilize that big offensive line to his advantage.
I almost
because the Chiefs got I think they got like 6 or 7 running backs in camp.
The only reason why I don't think for Darrell it's as big, he knew what he was doing every single time, and that was running straight forward. Darrell Williams was not going to mess around. He wasn't going to try and find a hole. He was going to go straight ahead. That's why
which is good with this offensive line because they were able to make the push.
It was great
compared to a line last year who couldn't get that push.
Exactly. So I don't know if it gives him a more or less advantage. I think we're going to see a lot more Clyde. I think Clyde's going to become the bell cow this year. I think you could see some Jerick McKinnon. I really like that Jerick McKinnon pickup. He was really solid for the 49ers for a while. I think he was with Minnesota. He's gotten injured a good amount in his career. But if he can revitalize it, especially as a third down back, if he can be a added bonus, that's big for Kansas City. DeAndre Washington was brought in to be that third down back. Didn't really pan out. Jerick McKinnon's done it before. I think this could be a sneaky signing that not many people are talking about.
I will say one player that stood out in camp today was Jody Fortson. Now, you know, when I say stand out, we got to keep things just in a little bit of perspective and context. We know they didn't have on pads. They don't do pads, I think, until Tuesday. Yeah, I think till like Tuesday. So, you know, it wasn't like he was out there missing tackles, but the passes that he was being thrown, diving out there, making ooh-ah catches, Fortson was the guy today that was getting a lot of good, making a lot of good catches. Also, Travis Kelce ended his practice early. I think he had hip and back problems. Could have been towards the heat. Trust me, it was hot and humid out there. So, but I think I expect him to return tomorrow for practice. And in his place, Noah Gray, the other tight end. I'm just drawing a blank. I think Blake Bell. They look good. I mean, it's really hard to not look good when you got Patty throwing you the ball.
Jody Fortson has been on the cusp for what?
Like 3 years.
Three years now. I think you're right. And training camp, OTAs, the preseason games. Was there anyone who had more hype than Jody Fortson? Maurice French was there for a little bit, had a little bit of that surrounding wide receiver hype, but Jody Fortson seems to consistently be that guy. This could be his year if his special teams ability is up to snuff. I think that's as big a question mark as any because you're not going to get your sixth wide receiver. He's not getting a lot of snaps in game, right? You're getting your most.
They're lining him up at tight end.
Jody Fortson?
Yeah, he's like, I mean, I think he's 6'6", but he's huge. No,
That's fair, but I think if he plays special teams, his best chance of making the Chiefs active roster.
Yeah, I know he's been on the practice squad, I think, the last 3 years.
That's why Marcus Kemp was so valuable, was because he was so good at special teams. There was a huge drop-off last year when he was out. Like, it was noticeable. Dave Tobe talked about it. When you don't have Kemp, special teams struggled a little bit, and you got to have those glue guys. It's not pretty. It's not glamorous, but you have to have those guys. If Fortson can be productive on special teams, he might have a good chance of making this roster.
Look, I hope so. I hope for all the best for him because, you know, seeing him the last 3 years, it's like, man, I mean, like, what do you need to do? And I keep thinking, and it's funny because you ask the coaches, like, what player X or player Y needs to do to make the team or whatever, and, you know, Andy will say the same thing every year, they got to do X, Y, Z. And you would think that they do it, and I guess they do just enough to where they make the team, but they make it like the practice squad or something like that. Hopefully, you know, whatever, I haven't had a chance to ask Andy about this, but, you know, some of those players that have been on the cusp the last 3-4 years, maybe this is the time that they get a chance because there are some players who did not come back that you get an opportunity, i.e. Sammy Watkins isn't back. It should open up a position for somebody, you know.
And no Anthony Sherman, which could lead to Anthony Sherman, and they're not going to bring a fullback in like a traditional fullback. It's either going to be a tight end, maybe Blake Bell, maybe Kaiser. You know, it's going to be probably your third string or fourth string tight end, however they figured this out. Like Jody Fortson, for example, has a better chance this year of making the team. If they want to throw him at tight end / wide receiver, you can do that because you have no Anthony Sherman. I think that's kind of a underlying story that we haven't talked about much. Or Kansas City could just take the easier route and say we're going to have another offensive lineman on the roster. That's another possibility as well. So we'll see how it shakes out. But again, no Anthony Sherman, no Sammy Watkins. There are more roster spots open this year than there were in the past.
You know, and I would say that, again, we are just literally – we're actually 1 week away from the NFL starting back up because I think the Dallas Cowboys play next Thursday night in the Hall of Fame game.
Oh, I don't – that – no, those don't count for me until
– Hey, look, man, trust me. Trust me, people are football hungry.
Sure.
We will do any – I mean, that, and plus it'll be on, I think, in the middle of the Olympics. So trust me, we will be watching.
You will be watching.
You'll be watching, too, because one, you have to watch because you're going to talk about it. But you're going to be watching.
I know.
Those games
I can't get excited for.
Look, Cowboys, you're only going to get one or two series out of the starters or whatever, but get here and see Dak Prescott bad, just see how he moves and whatever. I just like the fact that, A, that's the start. And I think the Chiefs, they don't have theirs until the following weekend, but dude, it's something, man. I mean, right now, we're hungry for anything.
Well, Dak Prescott's not throwing for a few days now, according to Mike McCarthy, because of a lat injury. No Dak Prescott, no Sterling Holmes watching this.
Got a question, though, because someone on Twitter put this out there, and it's he brought up, I mean, it's a good question. What quarterback do you think is under the most pressure this upcoming season?
I would almost say two of them, and they're in the AFC West. I would say Derek Carr still has a lot of pressure on him.
The entire NFL, and you go with Derek Carr?
No, well, hear me out. I think that he took some pressure off him last year by his performance. I think the Raiders fans are starting to more or less think, all right, he's not elite, right? But we can win with Derek Carr. I think that's kind of their thinking right now. If you could put a good team around Derek Carr, I think they think that they can get some wins. They beat the Chiefs last year, right? And Derek Carr looked good. Derek Carr had a great season last year. I know we don't like to give him a lot of credit, but he had a very solid year last year. I still think he's a lot of pressure on him to see if he's the future, the guy you're going to give all this money to. Drew Lock, obviously under a lot of pressure. If Drew Lock doesn't perform in the first four games, he's probably done, right? Yeah. Drew Lock's probably got four games to get his bleep together. If he doesn't perform in those four games, he's done. Drew Lock probably is under the most pressure. Around the NFL, Kirk Cousins, he seemingly is always under pressure, but his job always seems safe at the same time.
That's fair.
I mean, who do you got? There's not a lot, because there's a lot of young quarterbacks, and I think they're giving him at least a little bit of a leash.
I'm about to – I said Patrick Mahomes, and see
– What pressure is he under?
See, first of all, I'm talking about – see, I just love the look on your face when I say
that. That was an asinine comment.
It wasn't. Look, first of all, as you said, hear me out.
All right.
The reason why is because, look, we saw what he looked like without – as you saw, you know, in the Super Bowl, an offensive line. So now you have a new look a new tool and a really upgraded offensive line, especially, you know, Mike Grimm is back at his solid position at right tackle. And then the expectations that Chiefs fans are having for Creed Humphreys, and, you know, and we think that Trey Smith fell in the draft because of his heart condition, find out he's good to go. And now, you know, and you bring in Orlando Brown and Joe Thuney, you've got a solid, potentially Dallas Cowboys 1995-esque offensive line potentially out there. So one of the things that Patrick has said that he wanted to improve on was his accuracy. I always thought he was rather accurate, but, you know, the no-look stuff kind of, it is what it is. But I think that with the money that they've spent to fix that offensive line and the draft capital that they spent also on that offensive line, you don't bring Sammy Watkins back. You don't bring in another veteran wide receiver. You kind of go off the draft and the receivers that you have there. Well, we know how good Patrick is when he had that quote-unquote top offense when he had Kareem Hunt and, of course, you know, Sammy Watkins and stuff like that. Now, for me, is, okay, Patrick, we got your new offensive line. You should be well protected. Like, those players are taking pride in making sure that Patrick doesn't get touched. So, for me, I think you'll have all the time in the world, and for that, it's going to be, for me, Patrick upstairs, like, to make sure he's making all the right moves. And also, we know that Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, we know what they can do. But now that you don't have a Sammy Watkins, it's kind of like the blanket, so to speak. Will you be able to elevate whoever the number two, number three wide receiver is to, not to Tyreek's level, but to at least to a Sammy Watkins level, to where, you know, you don't have to worry about defenses solely focusing on those two? Because if I'm a DC, if Patrick's going to beat me, he's going to beat me with a number two, number three wide receiver. So can Patrick elevate them and make their game step up to where it will have, you know, so much of a balanced attack? And granted, again, Clyde's going to have to do what he's going to have to do. But when I say the pressure is on Patrick, I just mean that now that we fixed what we thought needed to be fixed in the Super Bowl, can you in turn do what you need to do, elevate the other wide receivers to step their game up along the lines of a Kelce, along the lines of a Tyreek Hill, so this team can have, you know, home field advantage, get to the Super Bowl, blah, 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 blah.
The only reason why I say no to that is because I have no doubt Patrick's going to do that. I don't think there's any pressure on Patrick because I think he's talented enough that we've seen time and time again. I have no question that he's going to be able to do that. I have no question in my mind that if things go as planned, the Chiefs win the Super Bowl or at least an AFC Championship game again. Just to me, I don't see pressure on that because I think it's kind of a lock, which is silly to say because any given Sunday and things can happen. That's just how comfortable I am with Patrick Mahomes. I just think he's that different. If we're going to go with quarterbacks who are good, because I kind of took that question as who has the most to lose or to gain. Like, Derek Carr has a lot to lose or to gain, either a massive contract or getting traded. Like, Drew Locke's either going to get cut or not cut, benched, or he's going to be the starter.
If you said Matthew Stafford, I would give you that.
I don't even have a lot for Matt Stafford because I don't think they're necessarily Super Bowl. I think they're playoff contenders.
Well, a lot of people, for whatever reason, have them, you know, they're like, oh, well, he's finally got the talent. I think he's had talent in Detroit.
No, he didn't have a lot.
I mean,
he had Calvin Johnson, and then that was, okay, you had one guy, but trash off the line.
But here's the thing. You got your players in L.A. You've got Sean McVay that's supposed to be this guru.
Sure.
Let's see what you – and you do have Aaron Donald on defense, so let's not – you know,
I'll give you that.
Got Jalen Ramsey. So you got two players that got 99 ratings on Madden on that defense, so you should be able to do some stuff.
I'll give you that. Breaking it down that way, I do think there's a lot of pressure on Matt Stafford. I'll give you that one. Jimmy G, you can always say. But the one guy I think –
And Aaron Rodgers. I mean, look, Marshawn Lynch said it best on First Take yesterday. If they do all this and they don't get to a Super Bowl, it was BS. I mean,
sure.
You know, so –
if he comes out and performs how he did, was it 2 or 3 years ago?
Just last year, just come out and play pissed.
Yeah.
If he does that, because playing pissed got him the MVP.
I think Lamar Jackson has a lot – this year, because for the first, 2 years, and
Cam Newton. I mean,
sure, but for me, Lamar Jackson has so much to prove at this point because he went from being very good rookie year, right?
Yeah.
MVP, right?
Yep.
Last year was a disappointment. Last year was a big disappointment for Lamar Jackson. He was hurt a lot of the year. He didn't improve on his arm accuracy. Everyone kept saying, you got to learn to throw out to the numbers. They didn't. Teams really buckled down. And the Ravens offense struggled a lot last year. And my thing for this is, if he wants to still become,
but he also didn't have his running back Ingram kind of fell off some of the run. No.
He had guys. My thing with Lamar Jackson is this.
There are some young
quarterbacks coming up. There's some young quarterbacks, and if he wants to still be in that top five where he wants to be known as that elite guy, because you have Patrick, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have Russell Wilson, you have Justin Herbert coming up, you have Deshaun Watson, you have Josh Allen. If Lamar Jackson still wants to become the guy, if he wants to still become the face of the – if he wants to be the guy that's pitted against Patrick in the AFC, you're going to have to start doing better than Josh Allen. If you're going to have to start doing better than Deshaun Watson, which he did record-wise. My thing is Lamar Jackson, this is a big year if he's going to take that next step to becoming that consistent elite guy and not just a –
Yeah, but
– won an MVP one year and that's it.
But hold on, see, you having someone really – because, look, I can say the same thing about Patrick because here's the thing.
No, he's won a Super Bowl. He's been to another Super Bowl. He's been to an AFC Championship game.
Hold on. I didn't interrupt you when you did your spiel. What I'm saying is, you said Lamar Jackson – because Lamar – did the same kind of look. He started his rookie year. His second year, like Patrick, he won an MVP. Now to say he fell off his third year is a stretch because he lost two more games. I mean, so he went from 13-2 to 11-4. Okay, he passed for 350 fewer yards. Rush for 200 fewer yards. I mean, and threw 10 less touchdowns. But Patrick went from 50 to 26. I mean, so that's not. I mean,
but he still went to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because of the collective of the team that was around him. I mean, if Patrick didn't have Tyreek and Kelce most of the year, we wouldn't be. You know, we'd be using that to say, well, Patrick didn't have
this. Lamar Jackson didn't have Orlando Brown and the left tackle and his offensive line and Mark Andrews and all his guys, then, yeah, you can always make the case of guy versus guy. My thing is everyone expected Lamar Jackson to improve on his accuracy.
And he did go 1-1 in the playoffs. I mean, it wasn't like he laid an egg.
My thing is –
I mean, because if that's the case, then obviously we got to throw Josh Allen in there. We got to throw Baker Mayfield in there.
But my point is if Lamar Jackson wants to be known as the elite of the elite, which I think he has the potential to be, you're going to have to start.
But you already think Josh Allen is elite.
Because he's improved year after year after year. Lamar Jackson,
they've been in the league the same amount of time. Lamar Jackson has won an MVP, so that makes him more elite than Josh Allen.
You're telling me right now, if you're going to draft a quarterback to start a franchise with, you're taking Lamar Jackson for Josh Allen, I don't believe you.
Well, Lamar is more dangerous with his legs than Josh Allen.
I don't
even
know if that's the case. Nah. He runs more.
All right, man. We'll agree to disagree on that one.
All right. We'll agree to disagree. But
Baker Mayfield, with the talent that he has,
he should probably be
the one, even above Patrick and everyone else, that should be under the most pressure because with all that talent you got and all that moxie that you act like you got.
And all the national media starting to get on the Browns bandwagon.
That's something. See, you were gone. We had Jeff Chedid on here, man. Oh God,
he's great.
I wanted to call you so
dang.
Bad.
I love when Chedid comes on.
Yeah, because I think he went to Cleveland round. I was like, come on, man, seriously.
Hopping on. Oh, we got to get Chedid back on when I'm here because that will be. We'll have us a fun one. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll be joined by Sam Hayes of Pro Football Focus and Inside the Royals. Back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Joined now by Sam Hayes of Inside the Royals and Pro Football Focus. With the Royals on a heater right now, figure as good as time as any to talk about some Royals baseball. Sam, how you doing?
Doing great. Love to be here.
So the Royals have won, what, 6 of 7 now? They're on an absolute tear. They're beating the White Sox right now 5-0. Salvador Perez once again proves to be the best catcher in baseball as he takes Liam Hendricks deep last night to send it into extras. What's your initial takeaway from this heater they're on?
Well, it's definitely really impressive. Of course, you just feel like it's too little too late, but it's a great sign for the end of this season and for the future seasons coming when you have these great prospects coming, of course, like Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez, Nick Prado, and more. So it's a great sign to see that they're playing well again. Their starting pitching is pitching well. The relief is doing well. The hitters are hitting again. Soler and Salvi and just all of them are playing so well at the moment.
So with Jorge Soler, I think it's too little too late, obviously. I'm not sure, does he have any trade value? There's, what, 24 hours, I believe, left until the trade deadline. Any chance he gets moved? I know that there was some rumblings about the potential Oakland Athletics taking a look at him. Any chance that this recent hot streak gets him moved?
I think it would be great to see that happen. I don't know what his trade value looks like at this point, but he's still clearly a home run hitter when he can be. The guy had 2 straight multi-home run games. He obviously had his near 50 home run season just a couple of years ago. The guy is an elite slugger. When he's getting the bat on the ball, it's just getting the bat on the ball. That's the only issue. I think maybe a team who's contending would consider taking a flyer on him, but I don't know how much we would get for it.
With the trade deadline looming, the two guys who would probably bring the most back for Kansas City, Whit Merrifield and Scott Barlow, any chance those two guys get moved? And if so, what does their trade value look like?
I think the Scott Barlow move makes a lot of sense. I don't know if they do it, but Scott Barlow has been one of the better relievers in the AL this year, and a lot worse relievers are getting good hauls. So the Barlow move makes a lot of sense. I would think he'd get actually a decent return. And then Whit Merrifield even more, but that one seems less likely than Barlow because Whit is just so like beloved and like the heart of the team along with Salvi, it seems. And it just seems like the guys at the top don't want to get rid of him because, I mean, they love him so much, they don't want him to go. But I think both moves would make a lot of sense. The hauls, I think, would be decent because what selling teams are getting right now is pretty good. But I don't know if either guy is going, but I would like to see both go.
Salvador Perez, in my opinion, is the best catcher in baseball, bar none. I know some folks like to say JT Realmuto and his all-around game with his defense, his speed. The biggest knock against Salvi is not taking a walk, which he's proven for him not a huge deal. And the second part is his pitch framing. Pitch framing basically means that the umps suck and mess up whenever he's back there catching. That, basically, when you say, oh, he's a better pitch framer, you mean the umps mess up less than they do when Salvi's behind the plate. Do you believe that Salvador Perez is the best catcher in baseball? Do you think that the metrics are too weighted against him? What's your take on this?
I personally, the way I've been saying it is I think he's the best catcher in the AL, especially with a bat. Defense makes it a little bit more shaky. The walking rate, obviously, as you mentioned, is not very good. But I think he's the best catcher in the AL. And for sure the best hitting catcher in the AL. And then I think he's the second best catcher in baseball, and I'd put him behind Buster Posey. Buster Posey is still having his dominant run. One of his best seasons of his career is happening this year. He's been fantastic for these Giants who are doing really, really well.
Just to me, though, if you're going to take one guy, you're in a one-game winner-take-all game 7, I don't think anyone's taking Buster Posey over Salvador Perez. I just don't believe. That's how I go about this, is in a one-game winner-takes-all game 7, I don't know who's taking Buster over Salvi.
Yeah, I feel like I would take Buster over Salvi. It's tough, though. Buster's been a dominant catcher for a long time. Salvi's been a dominant catcher for a long time. Both have proven it on the big stage. Both have been all-stars for the last decade, pretty much every year. and both are elite, the elite catchers, probably the best catchers, the most defining catchers of this era and decade and all. Like Yadier Molina and Pudge Rodriguez take the previous era. This era, to me, the best catchers are Buster Posey and Salvador Perez. But you can make your argument either way, I think, but I would lean Posey personally.
With Nick Prado absolutely raking in the minors, two go-ahead grand slams, not home runs, two go-ahead grand slams in a week. When are we going to see some Nick Prado action? Is he close to the majors? Is he still got some time left down there? Because just to me, if Ryan O'Hearn is the guy blocking him, that is just absolutely asinine.
Yeah, no, Nick Prado, I was able to thankfully watch Northwest Arkansas play here in the last few weeks against Wichita, the Wichita Wind Surge here. And Nick Prado and MJ Melendez and Bobby Witt Jr., all really pleased me. I think all three of them should be up in the majors within the next year. I think once Carlos Santana goes, that's when you get Nick Prado to come in. And maybe even before that, Nick Prado could be like a backup to Carlos Santana. You put Melendez possibly as the starting catcher, and you could move Salvi to DH. That's something that I've talked about before that I think is something they could consider. Melendez at catcher, Salvi at DH. That could help him long term. And then Witt, the guy is ready. Everything about him screams that he is ready for Major League Baseball immediately. He's fast. He's a great defender. He's got a great bat, both contact and power. He hits the ball 460, and he hits it with high exit velo consistently. The guy is an all-around stud, and I have been pretty consistent in saying that I believe that Bobby Witt Jr. will win an MVP one day.
What is Alberto Mondesi's future in Kansas City? It seems like the Royals are just stuck on saying when he's healthy and he's ready, we're going to put him at shortstop. We might have to move Bobby Witt, but Mondesi is our shortstop. At some point, do you think it's going to be, all right, he can't stay healthy. If he is healthy, that's gravy. If not, he's going to be the one that has to move around and learn other positions. Do we see Mondesi at short, second, third, center field? Is he going to get traded? What's your Mondesi, I guess, future look like?
Mondesi, when he's healthy, is obviously quite a good player, and he is a good guy to have at shortstop. I think I'd be maybe more willing to move Witt off of shortstop than Mondesi as long as Mondesi could stay healthy. But
that's a big if. That's a huge if.
It's just not likely. It's just not happening right now. But if he could, then I'd like Mondesi at third and probably Bobby at either second or third. Mondesi at short, Bobby at second or third, depending on how the other guys at those positions are doing. If we've traded Witt, if Nicky Lopez is playing well, if Hunter Dozier is playing third and he's playing well, whatever's going on at those other positions, I would be interested in moving Bobby there. If Mondesi continues getting hurt, I would probably look for the trade and let Bobby take short.
I know I have to ask this because Darren is going to be very upset by this. Sam, he works for Pro Football Focus, and he has some great analytical articles. I messaged Sam a while back wanting to get his brain picket and see what he thought about this. But running backs, where do you stand on the running backs? Do they matter? Do they not? Give Darren a little breakdown here with some analytics.
Yeah, for the most part, running backs individually do not matter. So the run game is consistently less valuable than the passing game. And in terms of like getting you in a position to score and a position to win ball games, passing will almost always be more valuable than running the football. And then I'd say the majority of the pro to running, like the props to who they should get for running, it should go towards the offensive linemen and then the success of the passing game. I believe that the passing game is the thing that really lightens up the box, gets those defenders out of the box into the secondary more so. And then the offensive line are the ones who really open those holes for running backs. The elite offensive lines are more likely to have elite run games than just elite running backs with an average line or a below average line. And you see that occasionally with even like Dallas. Ezekiel Elliott has had some times where he's had poor weeks or been outplayed by his own backup running back. Some running backs are just not that responsible for their own success. It's more so offensive line and then passing game success. And then I'd also attribute that to players like Derrick Henry, where Ryan Tannehill has been fantastic since he's come in. The passing game success in Tennessee is extremely high, and that's allowed the boxes to get lessened, even though the boxes are still pretty full because Derrick Henry has that reputation. They're still like less full than they would be with a player like Marcus Mariota at quarterback that they had before Tannehill, and Henry's numbers with Mariota earlier in the season that Tannehill took over were poor. And then when Tannehill took over, they exploded.
Darren, rebuttal?
I mean, you know, it sounds good.
It's facts, Darren.
It's not.
These are numbers.
Look, man. I mean, just like you talk about the offensive line or whatever, Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill, two different type of quarterbacks.
Yeah, because one's good and one's terrible.
Call it what you want, but I mean, but Marcus Mariota is not a passing quarterback, i.e., right? And you got, and you have to understand that because of Derrick Henry's running, Ryan Tannehill was able to throw to open receivers because of Derrick.
Why couldn't Mariota do that then?
He can't throw. I just said that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing for sure is like play action. Like that's a consistent talking point in the favor of the running backs, is that good rushing attacks help play action. But the numbers usually point out that play action is pretty stable across different offenses despite their run success. So teams that run less and run more still have about the same efficiency in terms of their numbers for play action passing, and same for rushing success. Offenses who will run for 5 yards a carry and offenses who will run for like 3.5 yards a carry, they also usually have about the same amount of like yards per play action pass and stuff like that. So these things have been looked at heavily by wonderful people like Ben Baldwin. They do tremendous job looking into it deeply. And that is just another one that really like opens up the discussion about running backs to where do they really matter? I mean, not that much.
Okay, I mean, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but let Patrick not have a running game and see how much pressure he's going to get because
the
team.
Dude, Damian Williams.
I don't think he's had a good running game for a while.
Yeah, he hasn't.
Like, the running game has been pretty average for Mahomes, maybe even below average in terms of volume, for sure below average. And Mahomes is still thriving because he's the best quarterback of all time.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Okay.
No, because he's at Damian Williams. This is my point. You don't spend all this money on a running back. You don't do it. There's a reason why.
Damian Williams was almost a damn Super Bowl MVP.
And guess where he was drafted? Guess what he was getting paid?
Well, hold on. He was traded from
Miami.
What
was Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry doing?
He was traded from Miami to Kansas City, so we've got nothing to do with where he was picked, okay? Because that was Miami.
Darren, this is asinine. This is asinine.
All right, man.
It's ridiculous. How can you not see it?
First of all, Patrick is not the greatest quarterback of all time, so I'm going to need y'all to, you know, get off your high horse, because if that's the case, then Giannis is. But he's not the greatest quarterback of all time. Let the man finish his career. He's literally just graduating from college right now.
He's on pace to be the greatest quarterback. Right now, he's on
the same trajectory as Russell Wilson right now, because he's been to two Super Bowls and won one and lost one. Let's get a couple more Super Bowls underneath.
Retired right now.
So let's get a couple more Super Bowl appearances and victories, because right now Tom Brady's got his number. So before we start crowning somebody greatest of all time, let's at least go beat Tom Brady a few times when it matters most.
I agree.
What I'm saying, he's not the GOAT, he's the boat. He's not the greatest of all time, he's the best of all time. In terms of prime for prime, no other quarterback has been as good as Patrick Mahomes has. And what's interesting is that we are seeing another quarterback in our own division who is trying to rival him, and I don't think he's succeeding in that quite yet, but the guy looks really good, Justin Herbert. He looks fantastic. I'm
dude, he just finished rookie season,
Sam,
man. Hold on.
Sam, I can't get on that phone.
Hold on.
But,
Sam,
no,
you are showing your age right now, brother. You see, no. you know, you sitting trying to say that a rookie coming out going into a second year is on par with Patrick or coming close to?
No, I said he's not quite reaching Mahomes' level. But in terms of rookie seasons, it's probably one of the five best rookie seasons of all time. And what Herbert is doing in terms of his ability to throw the football in tight spaces, 20, 30, 40 yards from one hash mark all the way to the sideline, stuff like that. The throws Herbert makes is incredible, but Mahomes still has a leg up on him. Mahomes, that is
he's got multiple legs up on him.
That is the best start to a career ever, is Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I mean, well, hold on. Let us not forget, because I'm just messing with you. But sound like you're about 14 years old now. Now, let's not forget, Patrick also had Kareem Hunt his first 4 years, so that did kind of help offset that, you know, with his 50 touchdowns.
And the offensive line was better.
Well, the offensive line was definitely much better. So what I'm saying is he had a lot more going for him than what Justin Herbert did. So let's, you know, we got to keep things within context and stuff. So, but, you know, when you say he's coming back, I'm like, hold on, man, you crowning this dude. Like, I mean, look, I know he had a rookie, he had a great rookie year. He only got in because they punctured my boy's heart.
The medical, medical staff, really.
You know, I mean, so they sabotaged Tyrod Taylor. So, I mean, so, you know, some things worked in his favor to where he was able to do. And look, had he knocked off Kansas City in his first game, it would have been, you know, would have been something to behold or whatever. But they should have won more games than what they even did. So there were some games, because one game he cost me some money, too.
Yep,
I remember that.
But Herbert was the one who was carrying them in those games. It was other people who were costing them those games.
The head coach cost them.
It was missed field goals. It was bad defensive plays. It was the defense collapsing on final drives. It was receivers dropping balls. It was all sorts of stuff. Herbert was responsible for, I'm not sure how many losses Herbert was responsible for, but it wasn't many. His teammates were really costing him in some certain circumstances, especially. Like
Sam, I do agree. The head coach was a nightmare.
Hold on, I'm sorry.
We got to take a break,
no,
fellas.
No, that's fine, but what happened in the New England game when they lost 45-0? Whose fault was that?
The entire squad.
Oh, okay. I just
you
make
ain't
sure.
Putting 45 yeah. up.
I'm just saying, because Herbert only threw for 209, so I just want to make sure.
I don't remember what happened in that game, but
I got
it wasn't
ask.
Good.
Yeah. Justin Herbert's a much better quarterback than that.
But look, thank you for joining us. We will definitely have you back
Sam,
on.
Sam, we got to have you back on because we got to. I like you pissing Darren off. I like the little match you guys got going on. That's fun. Sam Hayes, check him out. Follow him on Twitter at Wichita Chiefs Sam. Follow him on Pro Football Focus, SI Chiefs, and Inside the Royals. We'll take a quick break. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Thank you to Sam Hayes, Pro Football Focus, SI Chiefs, and Inside the Royals coming on talking Chiefs and Royals. Darren, I know you want to talk Olympics. Get into it, baby.
Well, basically, look, I want everyone, track and field starts tonight. You know, watch out for the women's 100. But again, the young lady, Sterling, I want you, and I'm going to quiz you, so you need to make sure you watch it.
Mo. You used to say Mew.
I used to, too. My daughter corrected me.
Your daughter corrected you. Okay. I was going off your lead.
Yeah, it's a thing, Mo. So she runs the 800 first round begins tonight. I think they got six heats. So she's, I don't know which heat she's in, but I know it starts at 8:25 tonight. Or it could be 7:25 our time. I really got to check and make sure on that. So if you get a chance, make sure you tune in, watch it. She is going to be America's hopeful to win the gold medal, which will be the first time since the second time since the 1968 Olympics in Mexico that a U.S. American woman has won the 800 meter. And so, you know, first round's tonight. The 100, the women's 100 prelims is tonight. I think that starts at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock. I got to, you know, this whole Tokyo stuff is messing me up right now. So all I know is got the workout in. I'm going home, just sitting on the couch, watching the Olympics tonight.
How has Team USA done so far?
Talking about the basketball team, men's team?
No, just in everything. How has Team USA held up? I know Japan was winning a lot of golds early on.
I think the U.S. is, from my understanding and from what I'm looking at up here, I believe that they are still in the, you know, the leader count as it relates to the gold medal stuff. I'm trying to look at it now while we're still on the air. But if they, the count, USA is still in the lead, 38 total gold medals. They are second behind China and Japan with 14 gold medals. China and Japan both have 15 respectively.
Let's go USA, baby. I love the Olympics just for the national pride that comes with it.
And congratulations to Suni Lee for winning the all-around gymnastics for the women.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was very, very cool.
Yeah,
very cool. Well, thank you guys. This was Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. Thank you to Sam Hayes again. Follow him on Twitter at Wichita. WichitaChiefs now, Doc. I'm drawing a blank. I feel like it. Just follow him at SI Chiefs and
just,
Pro Football Focus and Inside
Twitter.
The Royals. You'll see him. Sam Hayes. It's difficult trying to figure out people's Twitter accounts. We'll be back live here tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. We are out of here.